Coming up on Golf Today, all aboard the Tom Kim train. Golf's newest superstar hops on to talk about his week at the President's Cup, what's next for the internationals, and what's it like being a household name overnight. And former Stanford star Andrea Lee joins the program to reminisce about her first LPGA win in Portland and the strong family bonds that helped her push through some very tough times. And off this President's Cup, how about a way too early Ryder Cup prediction? What will the teams look like? Which team will win in Roma? Ciao, bella. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Say a very good afternoon. Welcome into our Golf Today studios. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Anna Jackson, delighted to be back alongside the brilliant Damon Hack, who had quite the weekend, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. But we have also got quite the show ahead of us. Tom Kim is literally standing by right now to go through his absolute heroics at the President's Cup. He brought that place to life on Saturday. It's going to be so much fun talking to him.
It is. Can't wait to talk to him again. We spoke to him a little bit ago during his great summer at the Wyndham. I tell you what, everybody's aboard the Tom Kim train now, and I was early, you know, on the train. This young man has the charisma, he has star power, he has game, just 20 years of age. Can't wait to talk to him. Obviously wanted to get the victory in Charlotte, but what a magical week for him.
He's just an absolute breath of fresh air. The President's Cup would not have been the same without him this year. When it got to 8-2 on that Friday evening, we all kind of had our head in our hands and said, well, it's game over. You know, is Sunday even going to matter? And then Tom Kim comes out storming on Saturday with those two partnerships and the foursomes and the four ball. Two eagles on 11, by the way, which turned those matches around. It was just so fun to watch.
I love athletes, Anna, who want the ball. And Tom Kim wants the ball. And it's neat for golf to have new stars, you know, new stories, you know, new heroes to meet. And this one really unexpected. You consider his very quick journey to superstardom, who's lived all over the world and speaks different languages, lived in the Philippines and Korea. It's fun to get to know this young man. We'll do again in just a few minutes.
Yes, in just a few minutes. But before that, we talk about the heroics of Tom Kim. How about the heroics of Damon Hack over the weekend? This leads me perfectly onto the best thing I saw. Yeah, it was at the Pure Insurance Championship. Not just Tom Kim out there doing some magical things. D-Hack, look at you here up out at Pebble Beach. I'm looking forward to this. Let's look at some of your highlights, shall we?
Yeah, this was the 17th hole Friday, a little 9-iron. Playing downwind. I just didn't quite catch it the way I wanted to. Flared it out to the right, hit a pitch to about 10, 12 feet, missed the putt, made bogey on the hole. But I tell you, this is my first competition in a pro-am. And Friday and Saturday, I played pretty well for me. I would say I played better than I am. And then Sunday, I remembered who I was. We ended up losing by a shot. But I took this photo, the Nicklaus photo, on 18. Oh gosh, I parred this hole as well. It was a magical time, but I tell you, I don't know how anybody wins a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Anna, because the golf club felt like a snake in my hands on Sunday. I was very uncomfortable because on Friday and Saturday, I didn't care. I'd booked my flight to come home Sunday morning, not thinking I'd even make the cut. Then all of a sudden, I had a chance to win, and I remembered why I sit behind the desk.
But don't be modesty, Hat. You finished just one shot back in winning the pro-am element of the competition. I mean, that's huge. Now, I have followed your game for a good couple of years.
Yes.
Now, and I know there are certain elements of the game you're always working on. You're often swinging a club around the office, working on the chipping and the putting. But this was your week, D. What was working so well for you out there?
Honestly, it was target. Friday and Saturday, I was not worried about my golf swing. I wasn't worried about positions here. I was like, see target, hit target, especially at Spyglass, which is tree-lined. I'd pick a tree in the distance and just aim it and hit it. I kept it simple. My mom and sister drove up from L.A. Cousin drove down from Stanford. It was just, it was all work until that final round. Anna, but I tell you what, I hope I get invited back because it was a really magical time.
I'm so excited for you. I know how much this would have meant to you.
Yeah.
And to get at that, and also with the First Tee Kids as well.
Yes.
Very inspiring little element to that event. It's such a cool event. Pebble Beach has now been graced in your golfing history.
Yeah, the First Tee does it right, and Pure Insurance does it right as well. But enough about me. How about some Tom Kim appreciation? This young man, you'll recall, burst onto the scene here in the United States at the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit and sealed his place in the game by winning the Wyndham Championship. Now, you may recall, started the tournament with an 8 on the first hole and still managed to win in Greensboro by 5 shots behind the strength of a final round 61. Now, earlier that week, Kim joined us on Golf Today to plead his case for a spot on Trevor Immelman's President's Cup team. I have Trevor Immelman's cell phone number. Do you need me to put a word in for you? How are you handling the potential of making the President's Cup team for the first time? Because I'm happy to go to bat for you. I love your golf swing.
Please. I mean, I would appreciate that. You know, please talk to Trevor, and hopefully I make that team. You know, it's, yeah, that team is a team that everyone wants spot on. And I'm trying to, but at the same time, not really worried about it. I feel like good golf just takes care of everything. You know, that's what I got to do. But in a couple of weeks, if I can ever make that team, you know, it definitely would be a dream come true. And hopefully I can contribute to the team.
Well, what do you know, Damon? Tom Kim made the team, and he certainly made himself known thanks to moments like this Saturday afternoon in that four ball, wiping the slate clean with Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele in front of his team. What a moment.
Yeah, didn't need my help. What an emotional leader. Big game, big charisma, and big results, too. You see that 2-3-0 record, very close loss in singles to Max Homa, but clearly was ready for the big stage. And again, just almost like a spiritual leader for this team, and someone you would think would be on many international teams down the line. And it's great to have Tom Kim join us on this Tuesday. I imagine the last couple of days were quite emotional for you. First of all, when you reflect on your week in Charlotte, what stands out to you right now?
I think the big thing for me is just having the camaraderie with my team. I think it's the biggest thing. I've made a lot of friends last week, and that putt on Saturday was pretty special. I'm not gonna lie, it was very, very special. So if I would need to pick a shot, that would probably be it.
Tom, what was Trevor's best attribute as captain?
He's a great speaker. I think he could be a motivational speaker. It's unbelievable with the way he talks to the team. He got us going. From the very, very beginning, he got us pumped. He wanted us to bring so much energy. And to be honest, the fist pumps were, I was definitely thinking of him. I wanted to win points for him. And those emotions were definitely, he played a big part of it.
Tom, the internationals, they needed a beating heart over the weekend. They needed something to turn your team around. Tell us, what was the spirit like? What was the energy like on Friday evening when you got home on the bus and you were 8-2 down? And what did you say to yourself coming out on that Saturday morning? Because you managed to produce some absolute magic that morning.
It was tough. You know, we felt like we played great golf, but, you know, we were down 8-2. You know, they played exceptionally well, and we were just behind, and I told myself, I'm not going to lie, I was pretty angry. I did lose two matches, and just because they played so good. And I told myself, Saturday is going to be a big day for us. We're going to need to play well. And I need to step things up. And we got to a really good start on Saturday morning, obviously making some big putts down the stretch. And I'm so happy I was able to get 2 points on Saturday, and obviously being a great duo. Like in the mornings, we beat Scotty and Sam Burns, and afternoon we beat Xander and Patrick. So it was huge, and that was a big momentum shift for us.
You know, Tom, we don't see a lot of rookies in these events, you know, really warm to the task of being an emotional leader like you did. You know, pumping up the crowd, pounding your chest, fist bumping when necessary. Why did that role seem to come to you so easily and naturally?
It's been a dream of mine to kind of do that in that kind of position. And I think it came more naturally because we were down and we needed energy as a team. You know, I wanted my teammates to know that I was thinking of them when I was playing, and I was fighting for them. And I want everyone in the world to know that we were going to fight. So whenever I told myself before the week that if I had a big putt, I was going to go crazy. So I think the whole world knows now.
They certainly do, Tom. And after that Saturday night, your team, they were looking at you for their leader. Siwoo Kim said that you inspired him so much, especially in those singles as well. Were you a little bit disappointed not to be able to go out there early on a Sunday in those first couple of matches and sort of keep the energy and the momentum alive?
No, not really. I thought it was great for me because I was tired. You know, I played four matches and I had a late alarm you know, I had a late wake up call, so I think it was pretty good for me. But I told Trevor that, you know, I wanted to be a team player. You know, they know what's best for our team, and I told him, like, Cap, whenever, you know, you need me and wherever you need me to go, I'll do it. So he did a great job, and we all wish that we would have won the cup for him, but it wasn't the case. But, you know, hopefully we can win one soon.
Tom, it got a little chippy out there. Siwoo was shushing the crowd. You had JT not happy about a putt not being conceded. What was the Sunday night like when both teams finally got together to hug it out?
It was awesome. You know, it's the President's Cup, and I'm pretty sure the Ryder Cup is like that as well. But when it comes competition, you know, we want to beat each other so bad that a lot of emotion comes out. But once it's done, like, we're all best friends, and I was able to enjoy some time with those guys. And, you know, I went over to their team room. I congratulated every one of them again, and because they played so good. They played exceptionally well, and we respect that, you know. But we got to get stronger as a team, and hopefully in Canada the same team makes it and we can kind of battle it out again.
So it feels like the internationals are united more than they ever have been, you know, with the new shield, playing under the shield, now under one flag, under one uniform. And it seems to be reflected throughout the team in that way. The friendships, the bonds, the camaraderie, the brotherhood that it seems like you guys were able to form last week was really, really special. I'm interested to know what the dynamic is like in the team room when you've got different cultures, different languages, but it seemed like you guys were so united.
We were close. We were very, very close. Like I said, like, normally when you play individual events, you don't really feel that way. But for some reason that week, we all come together. And it's amazing what I felt, because it was my first official team kind of event. And I would do anything for those guys. You know, I love, you know, they're my brothers, and I look forward to kind of seeing them again out on tour. And, you know, hopefully again, like, that same team makes it, so we're going to be closer and we're going to be stronger than ever.
Tom, to the viewers who say, man, this series is so one-sided, it's 12-1-1 for the United States, what do you say in response?
You need to get better. They are a strong group of guys, you know. And, like, me seeing them play last week, they deserve to be. You know, they deserve to have that record. And we just need to become better as a team, and we need to become better as individuals. And I think it's going to be really good preparation now that since we have a strategy, like Trevor said, and we're going to work on that. And hopefully, like, you know, I can make that team and bring the same energy as we did, you know, last week. So it's going to be really interesting going forward. I feel like, you know, we've lost a lot, so we're hungrier than ever to win a cup. So I can't wait to kind of have a win under international's belt. But it would have been great if we won in Charlotte, you know, just being in American soil. It's the Charlotte fans were awesome, but I can't wait for Canada.
You do have this amazing sense of resilience to you, Tom, you know, turning around and opening quadruple bogey at the Wyndham, turning around the chances of the international team at the President's Cup on the Saturday. Is that something that has always been part of your personality? Do you sort of thrive in that underdog environment, do you think?
To be honest, I didn't really think we were underdogs. I felt like if we had a good strategy going into the President's Cup, we really definitely had a chance. And we did. We made it pretty close. I felt like a lot of people, you know, they voted us out early, but we definitely hung in there. And I felt like we did a really good job. We were really, really close on singles as well. Like, early on, you know, we were a really big threat, but we didn't close it out. But it was in our hands. It definitely was. And I think we just, like I said, we just need to get better as a group. But I do thrive in those conditions. I do like those big putts. On Saturday, I told myself that, you know, I was born for this. I was ready for this. I had the whole U.S. team watching me over that 2-iron. And I told myself, I can't wait to hit this shot and just club throw at it. And it happened perfectly.
Well, Tom, as you know, I was on the train early. I was cashing those Tom Kim tickets months ago. Now that everybody knows you, knows your name, how do you keep things simple as your Q rating continues to go up?
I just need to play golf. You know, I won once on the PGA Tour. And for me, that's something, the biggest thing was, I have a full schedule to play now. But now the next goal is, how can I do better than last year, which was a great year for me. And I still have goals that I want to accomplish and dreams that I want to accomplish. So it's always going to be working towards that. And I'm a big golf nerd, so it's always about, how can I get better than I am today. So I'm going forward only.
Well, before we say goodbye, just physically, how are you holding up after expending all of that energy? When we saw photos of you, like, you know, laying down. I mean, Tom Kim is dead. Like, how are you holding up, buddy?
I'm a little tired. I'm not going to say that adrenaline dump it hit me harder than I thought, but I'm enjoying some time off. I'm back on the road right away, but I'm going to take some time off a little, like for the week, and going to restore. And I can't really get out of bed right now. It's hard, but I'm going to do some time off.
Well, Tom, get yourself a large coffee and maybe even take yourself back to bed. You deserved it after the weekend of performance that you put in. It is so much fun watching you. Thank you for your performance at the President's Cup. We loved it so much. And enjoy the journey from here.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, he looks exhausted. That's my biggest takeaway.
He earned it. He earned that exhaustion. And listen, for those that were curious, you know, what do the internationals, you know, need, you know, cohesion, leadership. I think the two stars of the international team were Tom Kim and they were also Trevor Immelman. Mm-hmm. They were remarkable in their leadership and in the way they really, I think, moved this team forward and this competition forward. To me, even though they didn't bring home the cup, it was still a victory in that I thought that they bought in and some new stars were introduced to fans of golf.
His mindset really excites me. The fact that he didn't feel like they were underdogs, the fact that he was looking forward to hitting that 2-iron into 18.
Oh, man.
All of Team USA watching him. The fact that he wants that ball is just incredible for the internationals.
Yeah. Great to speak to him again. And welcome aboard the Tom Kim train. I've been there, Anna, as you know, for quite some time. All right, folks, when Golf Today returns on this Tuesday, got another rising star joining the program. Former number one amateur Andrea Lee stops by to relive her breakthrough LPGA win in Portland.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Well, just a few weeks ago, Andrea Lee broke through on the LPGA Tour at the amazing Cree Portland Classic, a win that she has worked so hard to get. And with the victory, Lee earned 500 points and now sits at number 20 in the race to the CME Globe. Well, such an emotional victory for Andrea Lee, as she played collegiately for Stanford University and is one of the most decorated golfers in school history. She won 9 times in college, the most in the school history. She also reached the world number one ranking in her amateur career for 17 weeks on the world amateur golf ranking. So with that, I'm very pleased to welcome in the champion herself, Andrea Lee. It is so good to see you. Congratulations, because we just saw there you had such a successful amateur career, and we'll talk about your journey about turning pro and getting to this point. But to finally break through on the LPGA, just talk us through the emotions and the sense of relief that has come with.
Yeah, very emotional. You know, just coming down the stretch, I was really nervous. I've never been in that position before on the LPGA Tour when I, you know, had the lead or at least the co-lead. And just to finish it off with, and being able to win that event, it's so special. And I think it's finally sunk in that I'm a winner on the LPGA Tour.
Andrea, you dedicated the win to your late grandfather. What was his influence on your golf and your life?
Yeah, my grandfather, like I said in my interview, he passed away last year in November, and we were really close. He always believed in me. He always believed that I was a champion, and he was my number one fan aside from my mom and dad. So I had all of his support, and, you know, he was so happy every time I, you know, played well, and we would go to the range together occasionally. I regret, you know, not going more often with him, but we had a special relationship, and I wanted to dedicate that win to him. I know he was really happy, you know, looking from above and watching me finish it off.
Andrea, we know how successful you were in college. Your amateur career is one of the very best, but the pressure of converting that college success to the professional ranks, I'm sure, is pretty intense. You joined the pro circuits in 2020. It was a solid opening year, but 2021, the struggles started to begin. Talk us through sort of playing under that pressure and the expectations that you felt coming out of Stanford.
Yeah, I think my junior and amateur career has always been kind of smooth sailing. And, you know, once I turned professional, I put a lot of expectations on myself to play well. And to start out strong. And, you know, in 2020, I had a decent year, had a top 10 at the British Open, and had another top five at the marathon. But, you know, unfortunately that year, it was a COVID year, so nothing really counted for 2021. And I had to start all over again. And it was definitely a struggle. I think I missed 10 of my first 13 cuts last year. And yeah, it was a lot for sure. I felt like rock bottom at one point, but I learned so much from it. I grew so much as a golfer, as a person. And, you know, I think all of those experiences have, you know, helped me finally reach this point and break through as a winner on the LPGA.
How does one climb out of rock bottom?
I guess just going through the process. And as cliche as it sounds, you know, I think I was really anxious just to do well, just to find some good results on tour, and they just weren't happening, and I was getting impatient. And, you know, I had to go back to Q Series last fall, last winter, and didn't make the cut, and didn't play the last couple of weeks on Q Series. And I just kind of had to take a step back and, you know, just really be patient with myself and just trust that the hard work that I was putting into my golf game was going to pay off one day. And I started on the Epson Tour at the beginning of the year and got a win on the Epson Tour with my dad on the bag, which was really special too. But I think that gave me a lot of confidence moving forward, and luckily got a couple starts on the LPGA, got my full status back, and honestly, it's been a crazy ride since then. I've been in contention a couple of times, and it all led up to this win last week in Portland. So, yeah, it's just been a journey, but I'm really grateful for every opportunity that I've had this year, even on the Epson Tour.
I'm sure at one time, like you said, your college career was pretty plain sailing, a record 9 individual titles at Stanford. I'm sure you hear players say that winning is easy, and then coming out and realizing that actually winning is really difficult. You mentioned there that Epson Tour title with your father earlier this year. Talk us through how that changed your mindset and reminded you how to win and how it propelled you to breaking through on the LPGA.
Yeah, it was a huge confidence booster with dad on the bag, and I had to stay really patient in that last round because, you know, I was up against Lucy, who's also a good friend of mine. We played the Curtis Cup together, and we had that four-hole playoff at the end, and, you know, I came out with the win, and that feeling was really incredible just to have my dad there and to finally feel like the hard work has paid off the last, you know, year and a half. It was just such a crazy feeling, and it definitely kind of kick boosted my season, and you know, had that top five at Palos Verdes. And yeah, I think just that experience winning on the Epson Tour, it taught me, yeah, how, you know, how to win again. I hadn't won since, you know, my last college event at Stanford, and I really had to stay patient that last round. I think I was getting a little anxious too, but yeah, I just had to, you know, focus on the shot in front of me and just really, really grind it out. And I think I, you know, learned that and have taken that experience with me the rest of this year pretty much.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the rest of this year. How do you manage expectations going forward now that you are an LPGA winner?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously feels great to be a winner on the LPGA Tour. It's something that I've dreamed of my whole life. And now that I have it done, it feels like a lot of weight off my back, but you know, there's still so much more that I want to accomplish, so many goals that I have for myself, and you know, I'm really happy that I got the first win, but I'm definitely hungry for more, and yeah, there's a lot of things that I still want to do in my career.
Individually, the ceiling is so high, but also in team events, I'm sure that's something that you've got your eyes on. You've played in Junior Ryder Cups, Junior Solheim Cups, the Curtis Cup. We've got the Solheim Cup next year. You're currently 5th in the standings. How much of a goal is that for you?
It's a huge goal. It's been one of my biggest dreams to compete for the United States on a Solheim Cup team. Like you said, I've had a lot of experience playing on junior team events and the Curtis Cup and the World Amateur Team. So Solheim Cup has definitely been on my mind. I really wanted to make the team last year, but just obviously didn't play well enough. And, you know, hopefully next year I'll have that first chance to represent the U.S. and play under Stacey Lewis, who I admire so much.
Well, so successful in college and in these team events as well. I'm curious, what's it like being a professional, 24 years of age, trying to find a group of peers or friends, a team around you to kind of travel this topsy-turvy journey that is professional golf?
Yeah, it can definitely be pretty lonely out here. You know, most of the girls, they kind of just do their own thing, have their own schedule. You know, it can be hard to, you know, plan dinners with friends even while on tour, but it's so important to have a team. You know, I'm grateful to have my parents. They love traveling with me. My dad follows a lot, so it's nice to have him, and you know, he cooks for me, he drives for me, so it's really nice to have his support all the time. And you know, after that win at Portland, it was really emotional, and I was just really glad to have him there. But yeah, to your point, it's not easy out there to, you know, have a solid group of friends. I know a lot of the girls just from junior golf, college golf, and you know, I've gotten to know a few players out there while being on the LPGA tour, but it's just hard. You know, everyone wants to do so well and focus on their game too. But you definitely need that time off the golf course just to, you know, hang out with some friends, grab dinner, and just get your mind off the game. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, well, it sounds like we all need a dad like yours, first of all, Andrea. Well, congratulations. You're still young in your career, and it sounds like you've learned so much along the journey already. So we can't wait to see what you do from here. And thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, well, news today, speaking of the Solheim Cup, the U.S. Solheim Cup captain Stacey Lewis has selected Angela Stanford as her third assistant captain of the 2023 U.S. Solheim Cup team. Stanford, the 2018 Amundi Evian Championship winner and a six-time member of the U.S. team, joins Morgan Pressel and Natalie Golbis as assistant captains. Working with Lewis and the top 12 American female golfers at the Solheim Cup, which will be held at Finca Cortesan in Spain on September 22nd through 24th. In 2023.
Looking forward to that. Anna, coming up next, we just witnessed the U.S. team claim another President's Cup over the weekend, but what is the future of this young American team? We look ahead to the Ryder Cup in Roma and make some way too early predictions when we return.
On this hour of Golf Today, the U.S. is coming off another victory at the President's Cup. But what does this mean for the Americans as they look ahead to the 2023 Ryder Cup in Rome? We make some very early predictions. Plus, Matthew McLean took home the U.S. Mid-Am title at Erin Hills just more than 1 week ago. He made some history in the process, and he joins the show.
Golf Today.
And with that, we say a very good afternoon and welcome you back into our Golf Today studios. Great to have you with us, Anna Jackson, alongside the wonderful Damon Hack. Damon, top of the show was an absolute highlight. We had Tom Kim, who was the absolute star of the show for the internationals over there at the President's Cup over the weekend. And he looked exhausted, but he deserved that exhaustion, I think.
I was a little worried about him because he's such a live wire when we spoke to him after he won at Wyndham. I mean, he was absolutely, you know, bubbly. And of course, we saw the incredible emotion at Quail Hollow. Understandably, I mean, he gave a lot of himself. And even at the age of 20, I mean, you know, the guy needs, as he said, he needs some rest. But it was so fun to watch. I feel like golf, we were always blessed when we get these new stars, when we're introduced to players who hopefully we're able to follow for the next decade plus. And he seems to be one of those players who fits that bill.
Yeah, I think when he broke out with that win at the Wyndham Championship, just gauging his personality in those winners' interviews, you immediately knew that this man was a star. And we heard Trevor Immelman say in his press conferences on Sunday, saying that he's got the potential to be a global star. He's just, he's wired differently, was the words that he said. And you could absolutely see that, just the way that he interacts with his teammates, with the press, with the media. And he's just an absolute joy.
He's got the it factor, and he's got the game to back it up as well. So he was the star, one of the stars, but on Sunday at Quail Hollow, it was the U.S. team taking home the President's Cup for the ninth straight time and 12th time in the last 14 years. additions, defeating the internationals by a final of 17.5 to 12.5 points. There you see the guys there. Lots of smiles. There's Zach Johnson, by the way. That's the Ryder Cup captain for 2023. So let's take a look at that final day. And it got kind of close, you know. The internationals, I thought they kind of showed up and showed out, made it a bit of a battle. You know, 6.5, 5.5 ultimately on that last day, 17.5 to 12.5 for the United States. And I tell you what, Anna and Tom talked about it a little bit. Like, both teams had a great time on Sunday, kind of celebrating the week. Here's Tony Finau posting this to Instagram. That's
bit of gang Sungjae.
I mean, that is, they got Buck Wild, as the kids say.
That's incredible. Sungjae Im doing Gangnam Style. That's something that I didn't know that I needed in my life. But that is...
Sexy lady. It is a good song. I mean, right?
It's one of the most viewed videos on YouTube. It's got billions of views there.
Oh, my gosh. Song. So fun.
Yeah. And that's the thing about these team events. You know, the President's Cup is an interesting one because you never quite know how competitive it is going to be going into it. And when we came to Friday night and it was 8-2 down, there was the question of, do we need to switch up the format? Should this be a mixed event? We had a lot of conversation about that in the build-up. Should we bring in the top six internationals and U.S. women's into both teams, which would, by the way, be an incredibly exciting event in itself. But the weekend did pay off, and it was competitive. But it was lucky that it did, because it easily couldn't have been.
I think you're right. And I saw, you know, Beth Ann Nichols, you wrote about this for Golf Week, and I know that on Live From as well, Paul McGinley talked about that potential of making it a mixed event. I think it should stay the way it is. You know, make a different event that is a mixed event and involve the men and the women. But I want to see these international players have a chance. I want to see the KH Lees. I want to see the Canadians, Corey Connors and Taylor Pender, the baby, with a chance to bounce back. And I want to see Tom Kim. And I want to hear the voice and the strength of Trevor Immelman, who I thought did a wonderful job as captain. Can't wait to see him and hear him as an analyst for CBS. I just think he had the right spirit and struck the right tone for putting this team together, how difficult a task it has been. And Nick Price banging his head against the wall for years and years, and seeing Ernie Els kind of come up with this shield and giving this team something to play for. I think they deserve another several opportunities to try to get back on the board and get a victory. It's been a long time, obviously, since 1998, but I think these players deserve an opportunity. Tom Kim, it hasn't been around for a long time. Yeah. Give him an opportunity. Give Mike Weir, who will probably be captain in Canada, an opportunity to let these players figure out a way to get a victory.
The only thing that you worry about, you know, successful teams and team events, it takes time for them to evolve and for them to find the formula that makes it work. The USA, they haven't always had that winning kind of element and those winning ingredients, but they have put things in place to get them to the team that they are today. The international team has been decimated by the defections with Liv, and so they had 8 rookies on that team, and they did incredibly well, considering the fact that some of them, I imagine, barely even knew each other, don't speak the same language. Mm. It's such a difficult dynamic to put together. But yes, I think it can be competitive. And on Sunday, we do kind of fool ourselves into thinking, well, maybe if that match flips and if this match flips and perhaps, you know, maybe there's a chance. And there was a chance, but was the chance realistic enough to think that the internationals can actually pull off a consistent win when the President's Cup comes around every couple of years?
I mean, listen, one of my bold predictions before the week was that the internationals would get the victory. And I did believe in a lot of what Trevor Immelman said. And I thought that the heat that Tom Kim has brought to this summer in golf, and that maybe with Adam Scott and Hideki Matsuyama being tired of being asked the question, that maybe they could somehow find lightning in a bottle. It did not happen, but make no mistake, Anna, it wasn't that long ago where the question was, when is the United States ever going to beat the Europeans in the Ryder Cup? And 2 decades before that, the question was reversed. You know, when will the Europeans find a way to beat the Americans? So listen, I know this goes in waves, and it's been a long, dry spell for the international team, but they are putting their heart and soul. You know, Trevor and his wife, Carmenita, and the way they presented the team room and the way they, you know, decimated, as you said, by LIV Golf and finding a rallying cry to make it competitive. And listen, it was never really in jeopardy, but I thought that they put their best foot forward, did everything possible to try to make it competitive. And I personally can't wait for Canada. Mm-hmm. We know how strong the voice is of the Canadian golf fan. And if Mike Weir is indeed the captain and that team comes together, I think he's going to be much more competitive than it was in Charlotte.
You are so right. You cannot fault Trevor Immelman for the way that he led that team. to face COVID-19, to face live, to face the hurdles. No captain has ever had to deal with those kind of
curveballs. The best player in the summer said goodbye.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Cam Smith, 64, at the old course, best up and down I've ever seen on 17. Gone. Joaquin Niemann, gone. Abe Anser, gone.
They could have done with Cam Smith.
Louis Oosthuizen.
I'm with
Schwartzel, Leishman. I mean, you can go any direction.
Yeah.
He did the best he could with what he had.
And he did a darn good job. But, I mean, looking at it on paper, this U.S. team that they had to face, I mean, it was one of the strongest we've possibly ever seen. And in terms of the hot streak they are on, well, it just keeps getting better and better as we take ourselves back to last year. At Whistling Straits, led by Captain Steve Stricker, the men in red, white and blue beat Team Europe 19-9 in the Ryder Cup. So next year, the United States will face a pretty tall task to retain the Ryder Cup as they will take on the Europeans in Rome, Italy, as both teams will battle it out at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club. It's going to be interesting. And let's just take a look, shall we, at the last time the United States beat the Europeans on foreign soil. That was back in 1993. And in terms of longest winning streaks on home soil, yes, the US dominated between 1927 and 1983, but Europe came into the mix in 1979. And that's kind of when the competition really heated up. But this is the streak that we should be looking at. Europe, six straight wins on home soil between 97 and 2018. And the last win for the US in Europe was back in 1993 at the Belfry in England. So it is a tall task for the US to get things done in Europe. So why not? Let's just go for a big, bold, wild, way too early Ryder Cup prediction, Damon Hack, for what we might see next year.
I think Europe wins, whether you have Sergio or Lee Westwood or not. You've got Jon Rahm and you've got Rory McIlroy. Listen, we've watched this movie for time immemorial, it seems. And listen, six straight losses on the road for the United States, and we can say that the Ryder Cup Task Force, poorly named, has given the Americans some continuity. We're seeing it in the United States of America. We have not seen it in Europe. Paris was an embarrassment. Gleneagles was no picnic. Wales, go back as far as you want. Valderrama, you know, Seve Ballesteros took driver basically out of the hands of Tiger and Davis and Fred and Phil. Can the Americans find a way to win on European soil? That is the question. And thankfully, Jordan Spieth, you know, who's got a great sense and a head on his shoulders, has said as much as well. As great as we have done 2016, and of course, Whistling Straits a year ago, can they find a way to win in Europe? That all these good feelings about what this task force did in terms of seeing the familiar faces, Steve Stricker or Davis Love, Zach Johnson, Webb Simpson, keeping the continuity together in terms of the captains and assistants, but can they find a way to win on the road? Because that's been a different kettle of fish.
I think if any team has got the chance to do it, it feels like it is this team for the US, because they have got, for the first time in a long time, that intangible of genuinely liking each other. And
well
that's
said.
Something that we haven't seen in the US. And that's always been part of the magic of the European team. It's that brotherhood, it's that camaraderie. And that can be more powerful than any kind of official world golf rankings or any sort of strokes gain stats, because it's just something that brings this team together in the Ryder Cup. But I do think possibly after their win at Whistling Straits, after their win at the President's Cup, that the U.S. side have got this perhaps a bit of a false sense of security at the moment.
That's
and they're
the danger.
Walking off with a huge element of cockiness, as they should, because they were two very dominant wins. But it's one thing winning at the President's Cup, where you've got 10 players on your team who are ranked higher than the best player on the international team, Hideki Matsuyama. It is so outweighed. But also over at Whistling Straits, you know, we had no European fans over there at Whistling Straits because of the COVID-19 and the lockdown on the borders. So in terms of all that momentum, all that crowd spirit, the energy, it just wasn't there for the Europeans, which was a huge setback for them. So I don't think it was really a true test last year.
I feel like every time there's a Ryder Cup in Europe, especially, like we're introduced to new stars. You know, Fleetwood and Molinari, you know, Mollywood. I mean, they were remarkable together. And it just seems like even as we say goodbye to this generation, potentially, of Poulter and Westwood and Sergio and Keimer and G-Mac and Stenson, that perhaps the Hovlands of the world, and Rory is still there, and Rahm is still there, and maybe we'll have, you know, Shane Lowry should be there, and yeah. Bobby McIntyre, you know, had a great win a couple of weeks ago, and keep hearing a lot about the Hogarth twins who hit it a country mile. And I just think that the way they set up the golf courses over there, my goodness, they have found a way to make the Americans uncomfortable. Valderrama, Paris, K Club. You know, for time immemorial, we have seen it. There's been two times I've been at sporting events where my ears hurt. One was the Steelers-Cardinals Super Bowl when James Harrison took an interception some 99 yards back right before halftime. Steelers beat the Cardinals. And the other was when Lee Westwood and Darren Clark were on that tee box in 2006 at the K Club. I've never heard a louder sound. And I'm sure it was similar in Paris. And the Americans have to figure out a way to solve the riddle when the golf course is cinched in and the fairways are narrow and the rough is high. Because Paris was abysmal. Can they find a way to find comfort and prepare in advance of Rome? That's the question.
And it does feel like course setup, as you mentioned, has a huge influence. It's those tighter fairways, those smaller greens that the Americans just seem to have a real issue with. The thicker rough as well causes some huge issues for the American team. But in terms of the phases that the European team are going through, and we have lost, you know, the Poulters and the Westwoods, the Sergios, these big names that have been the stalwarts and the glue to this European team. Mm. I do think there is enough talent coming through, as you mentioned, with Larry, who will be in there. Tyrrell Hatton as well has performed well in these events. Bobby McIntyre, he's such a crowd favorite. The Italian fans love golf, and I think they will get behind the Europeans. And it's just such a big advantage playing on home soil. It's going to be fascinating. But right now, I don't think the Americans are as strong as they think they are.
Countdown to Rome is underway. I cannot wait. And speaking of LIV defections, Anna, we actually have some news today surrounding LIV golf. Phil Mickelson, Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swafford, and Ian Poulter have withdrawn from the lawsuit against the PGA Tour over LIV golf suspensions. So Matt Jones, Bryson DeChambeau, Peter Uihlein, and LIV golf remain as plaintiffs. Lawyers for both sides are set to begin the discovery process of the lawsuit, and the trial is scheduled to be held in January of 2024. Golf Today, back after this. Welcome back to Golf Today. It was just more than a week ago when Matthew McLean, a 29-year-old optometrist from Ireland, claimed the U.S. Mid-Am title at Erin Hills over his fellow countryman Hugh Foley. Now, McLean joined Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, and Padraig Harrington as the only Irishman to win a USGA title. The match between McLean and Foley was the first time ever any Irishman made the final of a USGA amateur championship. Now, what does the winner receive? Goodies. And goodies galore, the gold medal, custody of the Robert Tyre Jones Jr. Trophy, and several great invitations and exemptions, a likely invitation into the 2023 Masters Tournament. Must remain an amateur to play in the Masters next year. And yeah, speaking of Padraig Harrington, sent this well done to Matthew on defeating fellow Irishman Hugh Foley to win the U.S. Mid-Am. See you at the U.S. Open 2023. And Matthew joins us now. First off, congratulations. You've got Irish golf royalty and Paddy Harrington tweeting at you. What are you most proud of in getting this victory?
Yeah, hearing from, obviously, Harrington's a legend of Irish golf and his success earlier in the year at the Senior Open. So getting any sort of messages of support from that caliber of golfer is, you know, a bit surreal at times. And like Shane Lowry had a bit of contact with us as well before the final, just sort of, you know, letting us know it's good to have another Irish player there at the Masters next year. So yeah, to hear anything from those guys, especially if it's, you know, messages of congratulations is great to hear. And obviously you've done something sort of worthwhile their time.
It must be so exciting to get the recognition of your fellow countrymen. But I just want to kind of go back to the beginning of the week, because it was a long week for you guys at the US Mid Amateur. The heavy, heavy rain delays caused some problems for you down the line, ultimately finishing on Saturday morning for that all-Irish final. How testing was the week for you at Erin Hills?
Yeah, it was definitely probably more testing than any other week that I've played in a golf tournament. As you said, the sort of the stop-start nature of the week was very difficult to get used to and sort of gear yourself up every time to go out and play. I think we went out one evening to play four holes of a match. So you're up there to warm up for an hour and a half in you know, all that sort of stuff, just to play an hour of golf or maybe a bit less was quite tough. So you had maybe 7, 8, 9 warm-ups to sort of do for the week, and just to try to keep yourself motivated at certain times was pretty tough. But you know, you just got to think about the outcome and what you're playing for to keep the motivation up.
So it's an all-Irish final, but Erin Hills is described by the architects Hertzen, Fry and Whitten as a Heathland course, not a true Lynx course. But were there aspects of the golf course that reminded you of home?
Yeah, definitely. I think the sort of the green complexes at times where you had the large runoffs of sort of tight grass into the rough down to different areas. The bunkers were sort of quite deep and, you know, very, very difficult. You know, there's certain aspects that sort of, you know, crossed over with Lynx golf. But of course, you know, anything not beside the sea is going to be next to impossible to recreate a Lynx course. But yeah, it definitely had that sort of, you know, Irish feel to it. And then obviously with the Shamrock logo of the golf course was pretty cool as well.
I mean, Hugh Foley, obviously a good buddy of yours, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But before we talk about the dynamic between your relationship, he's beaten you a couple of times this year, Matthew. Did that play on your mind at all entering this championship match? Because it was a tough one for you, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely. As you said, obviously we've played a lot of golf this year, and sort of obviously the more time you spend with someone, you sort of the closer you get to them. So yeah, at the end of this year, yeah, we've sort of definitely become good friends after this year. And yeah, as you said, he's beaten me twice already this year in the Irish Championship. So you know, he's probably in current form was probably the best sort of, you know, form player in Ireland. So you know, it's tough to beat him at any stage, but especially when he's playing, you know, probably the best golf he's played of his life. So yeah, it was tough and sort of, you know, a bit odd coming up against him in the final. But we sort of looked at it, at least then one of us was getting the prize at the end of the day.
Now, McGregor and Mayweather aren't going to stay together before a big fight. Mahomes and Tom Brady aren't going to stay together before the Super Bowl. You stayed with Hugh. Like, what was the dynamic like sharing meals and rides? What was that dynamic like?
Yeah, as you said, it only really became an odd sort of scenario for the last day, really. So we got over to Chicago a week before as well, and we sort of played a bit of golf out there in preparation for it. But as you said, the whole 2 week period, we stayed with each other the whole way. So as I said, you get pretty sort of close over that 2 weeks, and then you know we're sort of, I think, good enough friends and sort of respect each other enough to continue that into the last round, and we just sort of wanted both of us to play well. And as you sort of said, whoever sort of plays the best golf over the day will obviously come out the winner.
Well, Matthew, I mean, you're an optometrist by day, but by night, you're a pretty talented golfer who could potentially be off to the Masters and the US Open next year, which is really exciting. How are you looking to prepare for those moments in terms of your family and your golf and professionally and personally? I mean, that's a huge moment for any golfer to tee it up at Augusta National.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm, yeah, as you said, part-time golfer, part-time optometrist, but I sort of take the time over the winter to sort of work full-time and then have the golf season pretty much full-time then after that. So, yeah, I think the mention of sort of Augusta, obviously, if the sort of the tradition continues and I get the invite to Augusta, then, you know, just to play the golf course is, I think, any sort of golfer's dream. And probably not a realistic dream for 99.9% of people, but to be able to play potentially at on a Masters week is, you know, is pretty unbelievable at this point. So I'd say if the letter of invitation comes through, that's probably when it will hit home.
I want to drill down on this optometrist deal for a moment. Are you getting an extra shot or two by having great vision? You know, how good of a green reader are you? I mean, let's get into to the brass tacks here, Matthew.
I wish that's how it worked, because sort of I'd probably be a bit better at putting if that's the way it worked out. So I can sort of make other people's visions, but a bit better. But my own's not too bad. But I probably on the borderline of maybe wearing glasses to sort of read greens. But it worked out okay last week, so I'll keep it the same for now.
it worked out okay. I think you could say that. And just finally, I know both you and Hugh, I'm sure your performances last week will certainly have raised your hopes of representing Great Britain and Ireland on the Walker Cup at the Old Course at St Andrews. How much of a goal is that for you in September?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously a win of that sort of standard, you know, will help for any sort of any selection process. But again, Walker Cup so far away, it's the guts of a year away still. So there's a lot of golf to be played between now and then. And, you know, you can play your way onto a team, but you can play your way off the team just as easily when you get to that sort of standard. So, yeah, it's obviously a goal of myself and, you know, every other sort of player who plays any competitive golf to make a team of that standard. And, you know, it's the sort of the top of amateur golf to reach that. And potentially if you made a team in St Andrews, you know, it would be really, really special.
Well, it was a great week in Wisconsin and some more great days ahead for you, Matthew. Thanks for the time, and we will speak to you soon.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.